The clock on the wall says it's time to begin. Can't thank you enough for tuning in. And here's a tidbit you might like to know. What you're listening to now is my 500th show. But who's counting? Now, don't try to find the appropriate gift to commemorate a 500th mark. I think it's kryptonite or something like that anyway. That's completely out of reach, but it's the thought that counts, and I appreciate it. Yes, 500 times we've gathered here, and as impressive as that may feel, think about Jim Oliver, who's been a part of this program much longer than I. And although he's orchestrating a slow cutback, he deserves accolades that are loud and sustained. So thank you, Jim. And thank you guys for 25 years of friendship with Spectrum West listeners, 10 of which have been my pleasure. All right, on this program with a special number attached, one of our fresh voices, Catherine Thomas, provides a look ahead to the Flyway Film Festival coming in a few weeks to the shores of the Mississippi River. Her guest is Tracy Taubery Weller, in charge of programming. And Kevin McMullen is a lot of people's favorite musical storyteller. He's been doing it a while in several configurations. But he had to take a hiatus and wonder if he'd ever do it again. Good news, he's doing it again. Some say better than ever. We'll talk about that interruption and learn about the Renaissance. But before all that, let's turn our attention to a band that's making its way across big chunks of America, and they'll be stopping in Eau Claire next Wednesday, the 18th, for a show at The Plus downtown. It's a six-piece group from Portland, Oregon. They call themselves Ezra Bell, and I think we ought to get a taste and then dive into the main course. What do you think? Ezra Bell.
Comes to that part of the evening when there's nobody left to impress. You sit by yourself in the corner, pat your pockets to see just what's left. All of the lovers have moved on, for yours is the steepest of hills. When you glare at yourself in the mirror, they all know things that you never will. They'll feel the things you can't access as they stand by the river at dawn. You've grown older and cagey and classless, and regret just what they'll.
Now, Ezra Bell is a rather unique name, and although I normally try to avoid routine questions like, hey, where did the band name come from? I am so glad that I buckled and asked anyway, because my guest is the guy who came up with it, lead singer Benjamin Wamet.
I had this girlfriend once named Maggie who was an accordion player. She made EDM music, and she got invited to an accordion-based EDM festival that was taking place in Portugal, and she invited me to go along with her, so I did. And on one of her days off, we went to the beach outside of Lisbon. If you've ever been to a beach, you know, sometimes in America they have concession stands where you would normally find like a hot dog or some nachos, cotton candy.
Yes.
Well, in Portugal, they have these bowls full of little snails.
Ooh.
She dared me to try it. So I ate one, and it was the most delicious thing I had ever tasted in my life. I had two bowls full of snails, forgot about it. Festival ended. We came back to Portland. My first day back, I was on my way to work, and it had rained the night before. And as I was walking down the sidewalk, I saw a slug crossing in front of me. Without knowing what I was doing, I reached down, picked it up, and ate it.
Oh, boy.
And then I went back to my house, got a garbage bag, wandered the neighborhood, filling it with slugs, snails, and all other kinds of mollusks I could find. Went home, sat on the couch, watched Netflix with my shirt off, and ate the entire bag. And I did this a lot. It got so bad that at one point I wanted to hitchhike to California in order to taste a banana slug. It got really bad. The band almost broke up. I was unreliable. All I wanted to do was eat slugs and snails.
Uh-huh.
Once it started to get really bad, I started looking for help on the internet, posting in various forums. Apparently, mollusk addiction is actually pretty rare. It took me a long time to find anyone, but eventually this gentleman from Georgia wrote to me and gave me, it was basically a 12 8-point plan that he had used to overcome his own personal addiction.
Uh-huh.
And his name was Ezra Bell.
Well, there you go.
Saved my life.
Long way around, but what a story.
Yeah, sorry, you asked.
That's cool. No, I like it. I'm happy that I asked. Ebullient soul twang flowing and leaping like the music of a late 60s, early 70s recording of well-trained freaks dabbling in various genres. A gaggle of quite fit players conjure up a festive, dusky folk rock, blues, jazz, R&B, pop vibe that doesn't smother out the melancholy. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, first of all.
Thank you very much.
With the amalgamation of music genres and influences contained within how you guys are described, I have to ask about exactly how this band formed. I don't imagine you were having a beer one night and someone said, hey, let's form a folk rock, blues, jazz, R&B, pop thing. Was there a vision?
No.
or did you slowly simmer and coagulate into what exists today?
Definitely the latter suggestion. It actually did start on a porch over a beer with a few friends, none of whom are still in the band. I was playing in a different band, and it's like indie rock and electric guitars, and I wanted to make something pretty. And then we wound up with a horn player who kind of took over everything, and that's where I wound up.
Was there a musical configuration in mind? You mentioned getting a horn player, so maybe there was not a certain instruments combination right from the beginning, or did that mixture take some time as well?
It changed a bit. I mean, initially, the idea was guitar, piano, banjo, strings, and a horn section, and a drummer, and a bass player, upright bass.
Okay.
And it actually did come about like that, but it's changed quite a bit since then.
Let's talk a bit about the Portland music scene. People all over America hear that it is a marvelous place to be a musician.
I think they're wrong.
Oh, really?
I'd say it's a marvelous place to go if you want to go see music. There's someone playing every night, dozens of them. As far as being a marvelous place to be a musician, no. It's one of those towns that so many people are in a band that when people ask you what you do and you tell them, it's kind of embarrassing.
The Nashville of the Northwest?
I guess so. But everyone plays electric guitars and uses fuzz pedals and has expansive knowledge about gear that I will never understand.
How many guys in the band are Portlanders?
None of us are from there. A horn player, Aaron Madison, is from a small town about half an hour north. The rest of us have all come from various other places around the country.
Why would you migrate to Portland? Simply because there are a lot of places to play and record?
No, it's actually just a really cool town. Or it used to be. I mean, it's still relatively cool. I was living in Florida, and one time I went to go see a friend in Portland, Oregon. The moment I left, I was like, I'm going to be back next week. I'm moving here.
How long ago was that?
10 years. I didn't even play music back then.
What a revelation for you. Here's a list. The Decemberists, Everclear, Esperanza Spalding, Tommy Thayer from Kiss, Kingsman, back to Louie Louie, Paul Revere and the Raiders, wow, Chris Botti, Robert Cray, and many more. I'd say that's eclectic. Those are people who, I guess, are from Portland originally. So therein lies the deduction that Portland is a cool music town. On the phone with Ben Wamet. He is the guy who croons in front of a band called Ezra Bell, and now you know how they got their name. They're traveling all over. And in Wisconsin, they are playing in Madison on the 17th and Eau Claire on the 18th. It's a tour that takes you from Tennessee, which is where I'm guessing that you are as we speak, then on to North Carolina, the Wisconsin stops, Pennsylvania, Chicago, Washington, D.C., New Jersey, the Big Apple, Vermont, back to New York, then Michigan, and back out west to Yakima, Washington.
It's quite a slog.
So all that happens in the span of just under a month. You have 15 gigs in 28 days. Tell us about the logistics of such a tour. How do you travel? Is there a crew? Do you suffer on the road? What's going on?
The mornings are rough, but the nights are always very fun.
So how do you travel? Do you drive? Do you fly? What?
We have a van, a band van.
Cool.
There are six of us, so we've got four bench seats. Everyone seems to have claimed a spot of their own. We've got Honora Hildreth. She's my singing partner.
Yep.
One way to describe it. She has taken the last seat in the van. I've never been back there. From what I can glimpse from my 8 or 10 feet away, it looks like she's created quite a little habitat back there. Everyone does it different.
What's the release date of the new album? And the album's called?
The album is called This Way to Oblivion.
Okay.
And I believe it's going to come out sometime in January. There's a label that's going to put it out, so it's kind of up to them.
So you're doing the record label thing. That's big time.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Ben, where do your songs come from? Does everybody in the band write? Is it imperative that all new material fits an image, commercial or otherwise, or are you guys open to anything and everything?
To answer the first part, I write all the songs, then we all arrange them together. One of the songs was not written by me. It's an instrumental, and it was written by a piano player for his mother.
So that's Jeremy who wrote it?
Yes.
He also plays the tenor guitar, I saw. That's an instrument you don't see much anymore. A little four-string job.
Yeah, well, he was a mandolin player before, so I think the tuning agrees with him.
Your catalog contains some interesting song titles. Dinner Bell, Raise Your Hand If You Slept in Your Clothes, Admit Your Beat. That's from the latest compilation, I believe. For some, you know, a title is important. It's like packaging a cereal box. To others, it's an afterthought. And sometimes the title comes first and the lyrics follow. Where is it with you, since you write the stuff?
I usually just come up with something, a phrase or something that has precisely nothing to do with the actual song that rings a bell for me. And it's also one of the most enjoyable things about making music is getting to name all the songs.
Oh, really?
We have a contract amongst each other, and we split everything equally, but my only stipulation was I get to name all the songs. No questions asked. So we just got a hard copy, the first hard copy of this album, and I have no idea which song is which, because I don't even remember naming them.
Oh, you don't lose sleep over it.
There was one record where the song titles were a poem, and that one I spent a little bit of time on. I tried to do that with the last one, and it just got too complicated.
All right, man. Safe travels. Thanks for being with us, finally, on Wisconsin Public Radio. I like the sound. I played it for another guy. I pulled up a couple of your YouTube videos. He said, oh, I like that. I like that. So there you go. And he's a young guy, and I'm not a young guy. And the fact that I like it is testament to your covering us all.
Very nice to hear.
Take care. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So there you go. That's all about Ezra Bell from Portland. Playing in Eau Claire next Wednesday, and this is a bit of the instrumental written by keyboardist Jeremy as something nice for his mom. Here's a bit of their softer side. That's Ezra Bell, a unique group of musicians who, go figure, produce a unique sound in a world still packed with sound-alikes. You're listening to Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, a locally owned community bank, now offering new checking account options with personalized customer service. More information is available at charterbank.bank. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Hey, everybody, I know you're curious about what's on stage, and to satisfy that, here's the aforementioned Spectrum veteran, Mr. Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Population 485, meeting your neighbors one siren at a time, will be presented Friday through Sunday and the following two Fridays through Sundays in the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Festival Theater will present The Somewhat True Tale of Robin Hood Friday through Sunday and the following Thursday through Sunday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. Johnny Appleseed will be presented for student audiences weekdays beginning Monday, September 23rd, and continuing through October 18th in the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. The Outsider, a political farce, will be presented in the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson Fridays and Saturdays through September 26th. The St. Croix Art Barn of Osceola will present Blithe Spirit through Sunday. And the Stagehands Theater of Spring Valley will hold auditions for Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol from 4:30 to 8 p.m. September 23rd and 24th in the Spring Valley Theater. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you as usual. The Flyaway Film Festival continues to gain in reputation among cool places to go. Next month's event is in final preparations, and our Catherine Thomas caught head of programming Tracy Taubery Weller with just enough time to fill us in.
This is the 12th year of the Flyaway Festival. How did it get started?
It was started by Rick Facious, who lived in Pepin with his wife Diana. They created this festival because they were huge film lovers, and it just started as a small idea and kept growing every year.
Do you know how many films they started with? I know this year there are 26 films festival goers can see. Did it start in a more humble way? I would guess that it did.
It did, yeah. Diana was just telling me the other day how neat it was. There's an artist in Pepin called Dougie Padilla. That's where his studio is now, and back before that it used to be an art and design center. So it was in one building on the corner of Main Street in Pepin. So it was just one location, 50 seats, maybe less, with a little popcorn machine and very community-based. Yep, it was very, very tiny.
So that area of Wisconsin and then Wabasha, Minnesota, has a reputation now of being an arts hub. Any idea why that is?
Have you ever been to this area?
I have visited Pepin during Laura Ingalls Wilder days 1 year.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's actually the coming weekend. There were a group of artists that moved from Minneapolis down to Stockholm and Maiden Rock, I believe, in like the late 70s. And they were here through the 80s and helped build a culture of art. I think it's centered around the Stockholm Art Fair, which is always the third weekend in July. I'm actually sitting at the beach where the art fair happens in the summer in Stockholm. And it just kept growing and growing and growing, and that is a really big mecca for people that love art and to sell their art. And then I think because of that art fair, a lot of people would visit here, and they felt the magic of the way that the Mississippi curves around, and the energy that flows through here is a real thing, and people feel it. You're like, oh my gosh, I totally want to move there. And I play music, I'm an artist, I'm a photographer, and a producer for my full-time gig. The first time I was here, maybe 15 years ago, I knew I wanted to live here. And it wasn't even during the art fair. It was just, I was stopped and had a burger on the way back from a friend's wedding in La Crosse. I'm like, I'm going to live here one day. So when you are sitting here and you're experiencing the river and the bluff, there's something really special about this place. So it's easy for people to migrate.
I saw that in your bio on the Flyaway Film Festival website that you were a Twin Cities ad agency person. So you fit right into that group of artistic folks who move from the big city down to a smaller area. It kind of reminds me of some people say when they first meet or see their future spouse that they know right away, I'm going to marry that person.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this year's poster has an interesting story behind it. So it's a flower. It's got kind of a psychedelic feel to it. A quote from your executive director said that it was inspired by the people who came of age in the 1960s and revitalized the Lake Pepin area, and she called those people a group of forward-thinking hippies. And that made me wonder, well, who is your audience? Is it the group of forward-thinking hippies, or does it go beyond that?
That's a really good question. Yeah, you're right about the poster. It's so great. It's very Peter Maxey. There are a lot of people that live down here that are film lovers that are from that generation, which is why we just had a fundraiser last weekend at the Liberty Tree Farm, which is an amazing music event center and a farm right up the hill. And we screened the PBS documentary Woodstock that just came out this year. And there were so many people there, and they were so happy to watch that documentary. And there were a lot of young people there too, which was great because they want to hear the stories. And there were actually 2 to 3 people that were at the actual Woodstock who were in the audience. That group of people from that generation, because of the way that they were thinking and ended up moving here and living here and keeping their art alive, is pretty fantastical. And when we're looking at films to bring to the film festival, absolutely, they're like front of mind for me and the committee when we're looking at films together. There are a lot of stories written about people from that point of view, but they also love the really fun, crazy, weird films too that we bring, because they're all still, you know, 18 on the inside. We all are.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring a little bit of things that I know that they would really love, and some challenging things as well.
Tracy Tabery Weller is with us today by phone. She is the head of programming for the Flyway Film Festival. That's where you can enjoy a weekend of independent film along the shores of Lake Pepin and a bit of the Mississippi River, October 10th through the 13th. And you don't have to go to Los Angeles or New York to find good independent film. If you are in the Pepin, Alma, Stockholm, Wisconsin area, or over in Wabasha, Minnesota, you head on over to the Flyway Film Festival. Tickets, passes, and schedules are available at flywayfilmfestival.org. If we look at the purpose or the mission of the Flyway Festival, it's got several different elements in it. One of them is filmmaker inspiration. It kind of makes me think of someone who's younger, just getting into filmmaking. How do you see the festival inspiring filmmakers? They could be younger people. They could be older people.
Well, we have blocks of shorts that we pull together, student filmmaker blocks. We've got a lot of first-time filmmakers that aren't students as well. They love to come to the festival, and it creates a community for people that want to hear from other people that might have more experience. I always find that's really motivational for any other artist, I think, to get to talk to other people. This age thing kind of goes away. And there are films here that we program that are about children, you know, about schools and other generations. So we try to bring that all together.
The other tenets of the mission would be cultural enrichment, community building, arts education.
Mm-hmm.
As head of programming, what is it that you do for the festival?
It's my job to research films, pull them together, work with the programming committee, making sure that the films that we're bringing match with our statement, thinking about the people that come to our films, and just creating a nice group of experiences for people in the fall, which is so beautiful, too.
So there are 26 films.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are more regionally made, Milwaukee, the Twin Cities, but there are also some international and nationally made movies. Where do you find these movies?
There are two different avenues that we take when we are programming. We can go to film festivals, see these films in person that you can't see, you know, on demand. You can only see the trailers. So you pull together that list of films that you feel might work really well with the audience that comes here. So you'd reach out to those filmmakers and see if they're interested in screening at our festival or traveling here, which we do have filmmakers that fall in love with the area and become alumni and like to come back. And then the other path is this film site called Film Freeway. It's a subscription for film festivals that allows filmmakers to upload films and submit. There's submissions that are web-based that way, and then in person where we actually get to see the film. Those are the two avenues that we take. And then we pull together the best from both of those worlds and create this crazy thing called our program.
You're good at picking really quality movies that are recognized in larger markets, Los Angeles and New York. The Midwest is sometimes called the flyover country, but obviously we have culture that is on par with bigger places, so that's pretty cool. And I salute you for having that kind of judgment.
You know, it's funny. It doesn't matter where you live. It never matters where you live. You can do whatever you want in life, and you can bring anything art-wise to wherever you are. And maybe it helps that I grew up in the Midwest as well. And I just think it's very normal that we would all expect to see all this amazing work.
The Flyway Film Festival has comedies. It's got a lot of serious themes, too. Abortion, factory farming, public schools, and then the Lake Michigan monster. The Lake Michigan Moby Dick story was my impression. So that's pretty cool. That's a lot to cover.
A lot of different options for people.
Documentary, shorts, international.
Narrative. And regional. Regional is very important, too. We try really, really hard to make sure that we have as many filmmakers from the area as we possibly can, because we're celebrating their art form.
I see you sold out of your early bird special ticket packages. That was going on in July. Congratulations on that. Very cool.
Thanks.
But you still have tickets and passes available. Tell us about those.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you can go to our website now and purchase a full festival pass for $120. And that gets you into all the films, the opening party, the Saturday night street dance party, and the filmmaker lounge. Or if you're not really interested in having a big pass like that. We do have this really neato thing called a six-pack binge pass. So if you just want to make sure that you can go to a few films and get in, if you arrive 15 minutes early, you're guaranteed a seat. So that's a nice way to make sure that you get into a film or three or six that you really, really want to see. And then you can also get single tickets as well. So it's totally up to you. We have so many options.
And there is a student discount, which may be important for some listeners to know.
Yep, there absolutely is.
So you just talked about some of the events besides getting to see the films. You talked about the kickoff party that with the Woodstock theme. That was last week, September 7th.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opening night party coming up. There's street dance, and then there's an award ceremony and a lounge. So it's more than just films if people are interested in participating in any of those other things. And I think there might be music, too.
We do have live music on Saturday evening when we shut down the street, the main street in Pepin. And that's right next to the Filmmaker Lounge. That'll be really, really fun.
Okay, Tracy, well, that's our time for today. I think it was all really good stuff. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for helping get the word out there.
October 10th through the 13th in Alma, Pepin, Stockholm, Wisconsin, and Wabasha, Minnesota. FlywayFilmFestival.org is the website again. Thanks, KT. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, where support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting An Expedition in Art with Nan Reinhardt's Fused Glass, Kyle Enman's Photography, and Sue Cranston's Abstract Acrylic Painting, ArtZGallery.org. He's an author, a storyteller, musician, and educator. That's how they're listed on his website. I wonder if they're listed in order of importance or lifetime chronology, or maybe they're just a new order rearranged to fit the circumstances. Anyway, they describe Kevin McMullen emerging from a life-changing experience and bringing that emergence to Eau Claire in a combination of narration and performance that refreshes the McMullen image. Kevin McMullen and I spoke a couple days ago. This is your third time as a guest on this program. I looked back. First time was in October of 2009. We were talking about the 10th Northern Heritage Fiddle Contest.
Oh, gosh, wow.
And the second time was in May of 2012. You and I were yakking about a Take 3 concert at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls.
Oh, right. Okay, yep.
And then today makes three. I also spoke with Jed Malishke back in January of 2017 about a fundraiser that had your name on it.
Oh, yeah.
So first, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
And
it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Secondly, remind us in Cliff's Notes version about what happened to you that rallied so many friends in Sealy, Wisconsin. And then that'll be a good springboard for getting on to other things that we have to talk about. So back in 2017, why was I talking to Jed Malishke?
Well, you were talking to Jed Malishke because in 2015, I began to have, you know, weird symptoms. Actually, I've been having them since 2012, but they got markedly worse in 2015. And you know, I'd run tests before, but it became more urgent in 2015. Dizziness was pronounced, and I had some really strong hearing issues going on. And so I got the diagnosis in 2016. And it was a brain tumor. But fortunately for me, it was the very best kind of brain tumor to have. they took it out in July, and Jed and a number of other people had approached us about doing a fundraiser. And, you know, in the midst of medical treatment and stuff like that, we really just couldn't pay attention to it. So I kind of said to Jed, you know, go for it, whatever you can, but, you know, we aren't going to be able to help you much. And boy, did he, you know, he's just such a consummate organizer. He put together just an extraordinary day.
Mm-hmm.
That fundraiser was amazing. And so right away, my wife and I were talking about, you know, well, we've got to we got to do something to thank all of these people. And sort of in the back of our minds was some kind of thank you concert. And unfortunately, the surgery, you know, has left me deaf in my right ear, and I've got some tinnitus issues, and, you know, there's a list of stuff. So the idea of doing, like, you know, a band reunion or anything like that, I really can't play with other people at this point, just because my hearing is not up to the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I can still do some stuff on my own, and I've sort of come out of this landing on the storytelling bit that I've always done a little bit harder, you know, so I'm focusing much more on that. We did these thank you concerts. We did one in Sealy and one at the Qualm Theater in Shell Lake. And, boy, the response was just so heartwarming and encouraging.
Uh-huh.
That I thought, you know, I should maybe do this again in some other places. And one of the people at the concert at the Qualm said, we got to get this to Eau Claire, a friend of mine named Denise Madlin. And she contacted the Unitarian Church, and they were just very, very welcoming, and they've been really helpful. And so we've got this one-man show, I'm calling it, scheduled for September 21st at the Unitarian Church building in Eau Claire.
Yeah, and we'll get to the details on that after I dig a little further.
Okay.
Because that's my job.
Investigative reporter.
Yes, this is your life, Kevin McMullen. I was initially frustrated at not being able to find biographical material that went back all the way to Kevin the young lad, because I'm always curious about when and how creative bugs bite people, like the musical one for you, because you can play at least a few instruments. So just take it for granted that I'm asking that question. Did you have a musical family? How did music and creative writing of same come along for young Kevin McMullen?
Well, the music is kind of it's a little bit out of the blue. My mom sang in the church choir. My dad liked to sing. He actually also sang in the choir for a while. But neither of them, you know, played any really instruments, and I mean, certainly not around the house. And I, to be honest, didn't show any special talent. I was a trumpet player until the grade school band that I was in needed a tuba player. And since I was last chair, I was a trumpet player. I got a lateral promotion to first tuba.
Wow.
Music really didn't land for me. Until I got into high school, and then I started getting, you know, more serious about it. And I was actually a tuba major in college.
Cool.
And I studied with Arnold Jacobs, who was basically the god of tuba. He was the guy you wanted to take lessons with. He was an amazing teacher. I still find myself learning from lessons that I took with him those many years ago. And in college, I realized it was, you know, it took a college education to kind of point out to me that there are smaller, easier to carry instruments.
Yes.
With more diverse uses than a tuba. So I began picking up some other instruments. I had the opportunity to learn fiddle from sort of at the feet of Mark Gunther, who was, you know, the Chicago Barn Dance fiddler back then. Chirp Smith was coming through town periodically. He was, at that point, recording tunes, you know, in small towns throughout the Midwest, basically saving thousands of tunes from oblivion. And then he went on later to become a Smithsonian National Treasure fiddle player. I was really lucky in the people that I had around me musically.
Since you brought up and worded it in such a way as to say I picked up the violin, while we're on the topic of picking up things, I've always wondered how that went over with girls in college when they said, what are you majoring in? And you said the tuba.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't recommend it as a pickup line. I never had much success with it.
Okay.
Yeah, even, you know, like, kiss my embouchure, it just doesn't work well.
Was that on a T-shirt?
Yeah, actually, I saw one of the, there's a kid in the music school in college that had that on a T-shirt.
Oh, cool.
It's my embouchure.
I like that. So you have, it seems like, after reading your bio of years later, you've educated people on the tuba and in other things. And that was what? You just felt like you had to give back because you were educated formally and informally by so many good people?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, frankly, I don't think that was a major motivation. I think I started teaching to supplement my income as a performer. And then I realized that I just loved teaching. I love teaching.
Good.
And, you know, there was a time when I, you know, thought, well, I want to just focus in on my performing. And I quit teaching for like about a year, but I just missed it too much. Mm-hmm. And I went back to it again. And that's one of the things that I really missed, because I'm not teaching at all right now. And that's hard. I miss that. So, yeah, I think it was much, much more selfish. I just love to do it.
Good. And you might as well do what you love.
Well, it works for me.
If people only knew, it works for everybody.
Yeah.
If they just find it. We're on the phone with Kevin McMullen. He's coming to the Unitarian Universalist Church, as previously stated, in Eau Claire, Saturday, September 21st. It's a 7 p.m. show. We're going to hear a tune called Gravelly Ground. And it was neat to find out about the tuba. Gravelly Ground has a cool tuba in it. And I thought, wow, he just accumulated a whole bunch of friends to do that song. But I'll bet you he played the tuba.
I did play the tuba.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Kevin McMullen's a name you probably know from collaborations with lots of different people over the years. Also a founder and a mainstay in Duck for the Oyster and Take Three. He also has appeared, and we share this, by the way, Kevin, with the Red Cedar Symphony. I was able to appear with them twice. I was a guest conductor in the summer concert. I conducted a cool march. And also last fall narrated Peter and the Wolf with them. So that was
fun. Oh, that must just have been a kick.
It really was. Yeah. And so you love those kinds of collaborations. Plus, I have an affinity for the fact that you have written some musicals, one of which is called The Adventures of Al, being Al. Wow, he wrote something about me. Probably not, but what a great title.
Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah, those are fun. I was just yesterday at Hunt Hill. Mm-hmm. And all of those musicals that I wrote were environmentally based musicals, and they were produced at Hunt Hill.
Okay.
Over a sequence of summers, and Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary is really they've just grown and blossomed so much. Saturday, I guess, was the ribbon cutting for the new building that they have, and we started talking about those musicals the building that they renovated was the building that we had the musicals in, which was an old garage.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one of those moments for reflection, looking back on all of that.
Neat. Yeah, we do a lot of talking about Hunt Hill here. We run a lot of public service announcements about all of their activities, and there are many. So we're glad people like them are around. So you have emerged and are still emerging from the speed bumps health-wise that you have experienced over the last few years, and the show that you're putting on is called Into the Black Sea, Stories of Darkness and Light. Also noted, there's a forthcoming book. We can talk about that at a later date. So after all that stuff that you've been through, does this feel kind of like Kevin 2.0, or does it feel like a natural evolution simply brought on by something unanticipated?
Yeah, I think it feels more like an entirely new operating system.
Okay.
When I was thinking about, you know, well, should I keep doing this show? I said to myself, you know, as long as it's therapeutic for me and people are getting something out of it, you know, I'll do it. And if those two stars don't line up at some point in the future, then, you know, then I have to pack it in.
Mm-hmm.
And so far it's been, you know, it's worked. I would describe it as I feel like I've had a career as an entertainer. And that's been fine. I love to create and I love to entertain. I love to laugh. And now I'm at a point in my life where it feels a little bit more important to me to use those creative skills to a, maybe a little bit different end. And so, you know, I've kind of taken the entertainment bit as the end all and made it more the vehicle towards maybe delivering a message.
Okay.
Or message may be a little strong, but making a point.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I'm after.
Cool. With all your music and collaborations and stage adventures, you appear to be someone who likes to roll around in something for a while and then move on to something or somewhere else. How about this particular chapter, this new one? Does this feel like a long one, or do you already have your sights on something else down the road? It sounded in that last answer like you have found a niche of some kind that may be elongated.
You know, one of the things that I've had to let go of in the last 3 years is, like, planning.
Okay.
Because, you know, the brain surgery, there was really, has been no doctor that's been able to say to me, well, this is how far you're going to get, you know, before you flatten out in terms of abilities and stuff. And it's all been up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't, you know, I mean, I'm just kind of, I got to fly by the seat of my pants. And that's why I said, you know, I'll do this as long as it works for audiences and for me. And that's as much as I've planned for right now.
Yeah.
I don't have another, you know, like a plan B or the next stage. This is a kind of, let's try this and see what happens, because that's my life right now.
Yep.
Pretty much.
I was reading with interest that piece that's part of your bio, I believe, that started out with the woman asking you, who are you?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then you having to repeat that over and over now, every once in a while. Who am I? Who am I? What are you? Are you coming up with answers?
You know, I would say maybe I'm coming up with better questions. The who am I is a great question, but there's other more precise questions that are coming up that I find myself, you know, asking. Here's a way that Arnold Jacobs, you know, that tuba teacher that I had, you know, is still impacting my life. I would sit down with him, and he would say to me in his deep bass voice, you know, Kevin, when you first look at a piece of music, you have only one question that you have to answer. How do I want this to sound? And once you know the answer to that question, everything else becomes very easy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I am in this stage of my life, that's the question I'm asking. I'm asking myself, how do I want my life to sound? And you know, that's what I'm working on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you picked up the tuba, did you try to lower your voice like his?
No, it never occurred to me. But he had such a wonderful, deep, melodious voice. It was really a pleasure. Always a pleasure to hear him talk.
Yeah. What do you play, Kevin? I play
the tuba.
Can't you tell? That's wonderful stuff. Well, we're looking forward to your show. Tell me, this just came to me while you were talking. You see this, you know, in movies and TV shows, but I don't know that I've ever asked someone who's literally been through it. When the doctor came out and told you that it was the best kind of tumor to have, what did you do? Was it just complete relief? Did you cry? What did you do?
You know, I spent so many years not knowing what was going on.
Hmm.
It was over, you know, like 5 years. And particularly the last 3 months when I was falling down, I was having all kinds of what they call hyperacusis, where noise actually hurts. It's, you know, you wince at sound. And it was so horrible that both for my wife and I, the first reaction to, you know, the diagnosis when the guy said, well, you've got a brain tumor, was relief. You know, we finally knew at least we had
something. Sure, sure.
Because you begin to think, am I making this up? Is there something deeply psychologically wrong with me?
Mm-hmm. It's also human nature to imagine the worst, I would think.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and when he said what kind, I mean, you know, brain tumors come in a lot of flavors, and most of them are, well, all of them are bad. So it's just a question of, you know, which is the least worst,
yeah,
you know, kind of brain tumor. So to hear that it was, you know, it wasn't cancer, you know, I wasn't likely to die from the tumor itself. You know, that's mm-hmm. good news, but it's the kind of good news that, you know, if somebody comes up to you and says, good news, I'm not going to punch you in the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little hard to appreciate.
Yes.
The goodness of that news, you know, right away.
Yeah. Well, keep up the great work. You are literally one of Wisconsin's favorite sons, and we're looking forward to you making an appearance in Eau Claire, and we will watch for a lot of your other appearances, and we will wait for, you know, more recorded stuff from you, because that's fun as well, including what we're about to hear. Kevin McMullen, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you, Al. It's been a pleasure.
So let's listen to some Kevin McMullen. This is Gravelly Ground.
Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen. He keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye. I must be an oldie. My doctor done told me you're done being born when you die. Getting to heaven might not be so hard. You never know till you try. Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen. He keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye. The preachers are praying and people are saying the catcher was caught in the rye. Well, they ain't gonna catch that catcher at all unless they can catch on the fly. Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen, and he keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye. You shovel the coal in, the train keeps on rolling, the whistle blows loud, long, and high. Somebody's leaving to start a new life, somebody's heaving a sigh. Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen, and he keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye. Grace is a dancer. Grace is an answer. Grace is the only reply. Grace will sneak up on tiptoe, and then Grace hits you smack in the eye. Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen, and he keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye. The fingers are licking, and all of them chickens look at the pot and they cry. Oh, mittens are lost, and mittens are found, and thanks, but we'll pass on the pie. Love comes up from the gravelly ground. Love shoots out to the sky. They're throwing a party for old Mr. Wen, and Laurel and Hardy are at it again. If he didn't start, he won't get to the end. He keeps waving goodbye. He keeps waving goodbye.
next time. Thanks for coming over. And, we'll see you later. You take care, okay? Do you need a ride home? Listen, I can call a cab. No, I've got the number right here. Look, I'm going to pick up the phone.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin McMullen appearing Saturday, September 21st at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Eau Claire, 7 p.m. Hey, we have some time for some Spectrum Memoranda. The Laura Days Festival in Pepin is going to feature the music of Yada, Sins, and Orfield Sunday in the park, 2 to 4 p.m. You can hear material from their recent CD called Dancing in the Light. The Flambeau Valley Arts Association presents Sinatra and Company, featuring iconic music of crooners from the 50s and 60s. That's Friday night, 7:30 in the Ladysmith High School Auditorium. Tickets by phone and online at fvaa.weebly.com, and I'm sure you can get them at the door as well. The Boys and Girls Club Chippewa Falls Center presents a big fundraiser, The Voice of the Future, like The Voice on TV. It's Saturday evening from 6 to 9 at McDonald High School in Chippewa Falls. Proceeds benefit the club. Tickets and information online at cvclubs.org. At the Mabel Tainter, it's blues rock vocalist Joanne Parker Friday. George Maurer's Stripped Down featuring Sue Orfield is next Friday, the 20th. And then Louis Anderson, Saturday, the 21st. Tickets for the fall season now on sale by phone and at the box office. The Red Cedar Symphony is recruiting musicians for its fall concerts, especially strings and brass players. Concerts are November 9th and 10th, featuring works by Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky, Ravel, and Mussorgsky. There are some seats open for woodwinds as well. Information and contacts can be found on the website redcedarsymphony.org. Wow, there you go. Hey, thanks, Dean and Kate, for guidance and promotional support. Thank you for being in the audience. Next week, the amazing world of Cirque Mechanics coming to the Pablo Center, as told by its creative director, the Chamber Orchestra's new season. We'll begin a march toward the Chippewa Valley Book Festival and more. For Catherine Thomas, I'm Al Ross. See you next week.